This is a Truth for Today recording. Oscar M. Baker is speaking. And we're taking up where we left off, the end of a former cassette, on Before and After the Ages. And in the last 45 minutes, we had gotten over the beginning in Genesis 1:1, and down to the lie. It's beginning in Genesis 3:4. The lie. This beginning is still promulgated today, even among those who call themselves Christians. Unknowingly, they have been deceived as Eve was. And so, the great deceiver is still running things to a great extent on the earth today. I would say he's running religion. After all, as always in past times, is a small remnant of those who are really true believers. We still have it today. Now, the lie, Genesis 3:4. We'll repeat that. And the serpent said unto the woman, ye shall not surely die. For God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. The woman took some of the fruit and ate it and gave it Adam, and he did eat. Now, why in the world he ate is another question. He knew. He wasn't deceived. 1 Timothy chapter 1, you'll find the woman was deceived. Man wasn't. Now, we have a problem, I say. Well, Eve was made from Adam. She was a part of him, born from him, so to speak. She was his bride. And we are told that Adam is a type of Christ. And so, Adam followed Eve, partook of the fruit, knowing that he'd die, but he'd die with her. Now, folks, that took courage, not knowing all the details. We don't know how much he did know. But he was not going to be separated from his bride. And we find in the death of Christ that primarily it was for his bride, Israel. He gave his life for them, that they might live. Of course, that wasn't the case. In the case of Adam, there's a difference. Well, we go on with this chapter here. I just got to put something in here. And the eyes of them both were opened, and they knew that they were naked. You see, sin brings shame. And they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves aprons. Says they did. Eve wasn't the seamstress yet, but both of them worked out. Now, if you know what fig leaves are like, you can see what a tremendous job they had. For me, I would have selected big palm leaves. Is there any around? But to sew those little fig leaves together, that is something else. And they heard the voice of the Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and Adam and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord God amongst the trees of the garden. You see, there's another thing. When one sins, he wants to hide, he wants to get away, he's ashamed. And especially here, God, our Creator, coming. And they hid themselves. And the Lord God called unto Adam and said unto him, where art thou? And he said, I heard thy voice in the garden, and I was afraid, because I was naked, and I hid myself. Adam told the truth. And he, that is God, said, Who told thee that thou wast naked? Hast thou eaten of the tree whereof I commanded thee that thou shouldst not eat? And the man said, The woman, notice this, the woman whom thou gavest to be with me, she gave me the tree, and I did eat. He's blaming both God and the woman, isn't he? Oh, always passing the buck. He says, sure, I ate of it. But he couldn't do that. He didn't have the courage. Wasn't man enough. You're going to blame it on the woman. And the Lord God said unto the woman, What is this thou hast done? And the woman said, The serpent beguiled me. I did eat. She was thoroughly taken in. He was a bright and shining angel, one to be trusted, one to believe. And she just was like a gull. She just swallowed the whole thing. And the Lord God said unto this serpent, Because thou hast done this. He didn't ask him any questions, you see. Because thou hast done this, thou art cursed above all cattle, and above every beast of the field. Upon thy belly shalt thou go, and the dust shalt thou eat all the days of thy life. Now here's figurative language. Satan was not a snake. He didn't crawl around on his belly. But he'd be so subdued, he'd be so humiliated someday, that he would really be on his belly. And he would eat dust all the days of his life. Dust. Well, what the dust produced. And I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. It. I think it'd be a good idea. It said he shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. Well, Satan did bruise the Lord's heel at Calvary. And the day is coming when Satan will have his head bruised, which means Christ, literally Christ, which includes all his machinations, his dirty deeds and everything. And he says further to the serpent, And I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. It shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. Unto the woman he said, I will multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children. My desire shall be to thy husband, he shall rule over thee. And unto Adam he said, Because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, Thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. Not as a punishment, but the ground is going to be cursed for his sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. There's nothing for fallen man like work. And that's exactly what was good for Adam. To idle around in a garden, do nothing all day and so on, was not for a fallen man. Wouldn't work. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread till thou return unto the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return. Sad news. We don't know the feelings of Adam and Eve on this occasion. We can probably only guess. But our world has fallen about their ears. things have changed. Nothing seemed like it did before. I don't know whether the birds began to sing in a minor key at that time or not, or just when, or were they made that way. I don't know. But it is a scene to think of, because this is where sin entered the world. And with that came sorrow and pain and suffering and all the things that are plaguing mankind today, all his diseases and so on have come from this first disobedience. And yet, out of all of it, comes good, but an awful lot of destruction also. Well, in verses 23 and 24, well, we might take 22. And the Lord God said, behold, the man has become as one of us to know good and evil. Now lest he put forth his hand and take also the tree of life and eat and let live forever. And it isn't finished. Therefore the Lord God sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from whence he was taken. So he drove out the man, and they placed at the east the Garden of Eden cherubims, and a flaming sword which turned every way to keep the way of the tree of life. That tree is gone now, or at least if it isn't, why, nobody knows where it is. But this has come down through heathen traditions, got in their truth, of course, from the original account. And so today we have the worship of the living tree, the evergreen, the tree of life. People have been seeking this sort of thing. Well, there is the expulsion. Down to 4:8. I'm skipping some verses and so on. You know the story. And Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass, and they were in the field, and Cain rose up against Abel his brother and slew him. The first murder. And it was between brothers. An elder over the younger. And you can imagine the sorrow of Adam and Eve. Because they've really lost two sons. Cain, because of his guilt, had to suffer for it. And so, he was not fit to be one of the progenitors of the race. And of course, the second one is dead. There's a third one, Seth. And through him, we find the nations evolving. Trouble, sin, everything starting right from the beginning, practically. We have no idea how long that Adam and Eve lived in the garden before eating the forbidden fruit. There's no way of knowing. I know some theologians have guessed it might have been 11 days. But we don't know. It might have been 11 years or more. We don't know. God didn't see fit to tell us. All we can guess from it is the ages that are given of these. Adam lived 930 years. When he was about 810 years old, God said he'd give him another 120 years. It corrupted his way on the earth. I'm running a little bit ahead of the story, possibly, but it's connected. Now, we might take a look at 4:17. Genesis 4:17. And Cain knew his wife. She conceived and bare Enoch, and he built a city and called the name of the city after the name of his son Enoch. And unto Enoch were born Irad and Arad, Irad, and Irad begat Mehujael, and Mehujael begat Methuselah, and Methuselah begat Lamech. And Lamech took unto him two wives, one the name of one is Adin, and the name of the other is Zillah. He was asking for trouble. And Ada bare Jabal, he was the father of such as dwell in tents, and of such as have cattle. And his brother's name was Jubal, he was the father of all such as hand a harp and organ. And Zillah also bare Tubal Cain, an instructor, veteran artiser in brass and iron. And the sister of Tubal Cain was Naamah. Well, now I hear these folks got this all wrong. Our historians and scientists all tell us that they came a Stone Age first. Then went on to the Iron and Metal Age. Doesn't agree with the Bible. Well, you can see here that this is a downward course, devolution. And after man made his instruments and so on of iron, copper, and brass, and so on, he got so low in his culture that he couldn't do that anymore. And started to live in caves, and there was a Stone Age, making his stone axes and weapons and so on. Evolutionists try to reverse everything. Watch it. Be careful. And so the beginning of civilization. Well, after the sin of Cain and the death of Abel, a new one is picked to go on with the human race. And Adam knew his wife again, and she bare a son and called his name Seth. For God says, said she, hath appointed me another seed instead of Abel, whom Cain slew. And to Seth, to him were also born a son, and he called his name Enos. Then began man to call upon the name of the Lord. Now, this is not a beginning of worship at all. It's the opposite. He began to call what he had made Lord. Idols. Idolatry. This is not one of the places where Jehovah's changed the Lord. There's 134 of those in the Old Testament. Well, there it is. We have beginnings of civilization, building a city, herdsmen, musical instruments, brass and iron. And as I said, the Stone Age came later. Now, go over to 6:2. Well, I better start with one. And it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God, very likely fallen angels, saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose. And the Lord said, my spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. And there were giants in the earth in those days. And after that, when the sons of God came into the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men, which were of old, men of renown. A hybrid race, monsters, monstrosities. Satan was sowing his tares. Now, when you get into Matthew, you'll find that in the end times, before the coming of Christ, Satan will again sow tares. And quite likely, the Antichrist will be a son of Satan and some woman, possibly the tribe of Dan. This is how low the human race can get. And God saw that the wickedness of the sons of a man was great in the earth, and every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Ever meet people like that? They can't think of anything else but evil? Oh, there's lots of them. and it repented the Lord that he had made man and the earth. And it grieved in his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy a man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and the creeping things and the fowl of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them. I'm going to clean up the whole mess. But, verse 8, Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Well, that was a close call, wasn't it? We might not have been here. Well, Genesis 7. Noah goes into the ark. All of his house, his family. It says here, and the Lord said unto Noah, come thou and all thy house into the ark. For thee have I seen righteous before me in this generation. Of every clean beast thou shalt take thee by sevens, and every male and his female, and the beasts that are not clean by two, the mate and his female, the male and his female. The fowls of the air by sevens, the male and the female, to keep seed alive upon the face of all the earth. For yet 7 days, and I will cause it to rain upon the earth, 40 days and 40 nights. And every living substance that I have made will I destroy from off the face of the earth. And a clean house. Noah did, according to all the Lord commanded him. Well, Noah was 600 years old when the flood of waters was on the earth. Why, he must have been an old man. I remember that the climatic conditions at that time were different, because it had not rained before the flood. There wasn't the heat, the deserts and so on. But there was a dew that came up and watered the earth, and there was enough to keep the vegetation going. And it would be the best kind of vegetation, not having deserts and so on, which plants would evolve to, I say evolve. That's putting it just one way. Of course, God knew what he was doing. So they could protect themselves and survive by having needles and so on. There had been a great change since the flood. And Noah went in, and his sons, and his wife, and his sons' wives with him, into the ark because of the waters of the flood. A clean beast, and a beast that were not clean, and the fowls, and everything that creepeth on the earth. There went in two and two into Noah into the ark, the male and the female, as God had commanded Noah. And it came to pass after 7 days, the waters of the flood upon the earth. And we go on with the description. We don't dare to stop and read all of these. We wouldn't have time. 2 Peter 3:7 speaks of this flood. Well, let's jump over to Genesis 11. We got some more things coming up. We find that in this chapter 11 especially, that the whole earth was of one language and one speech. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, don't you, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they made brick. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. See the substitutes? That's what man does. He always is substituting something inferior for that which is lasting and enduring. And they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach into heaven. Let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And they've been told to scatter and to multiply and replenish the earth. They're not going to obey right from the start. The Lord came down to see the city and the tower and the children, which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language, and this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them that they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and left off to build a city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. And folks, a couple of years ago, I was telling, or maybe more, some folks about there being a rebuilding of Babylon. And the tower was to be built too. There had been some beginnings on canals, and one bridge had been built out on dry land, but with the idea of rerouting the Euphrates River under it and making the canals and so on like they were at one time. I remember several years ago I read that the British were making some examinations over there, exploring and so on, figuring out how much it cost and so on to restore that to what it was when it was in its heyday. And a granary of the world, practically, that ground with water can produce. Well, I hadn't heard any more about that for a little while, and I got a letter just recently. I'll not tell from whom or where from, but tells me that they've left off again by building the city and the tower, and it's just lying there, doing nothing. And there are possibly some political reasons back of that and so on, which is only a guess and we don't need to repeat. And it may be some nation that we will not name has been doing this for camouflage, having some deeper purposes in mind, which we will not discuss now. How long it will last until Babylon is rebuilt, I don't know, but someday it's going to be rebuilt. And it may not be too awfully many years in the future. But it'll all go according to the clock that we find in the scriptures. My man's not going to change it. Well, now, we go over to chapter 12 after we find that these got their tongues all tangled up. We have in there the generations of Shem and all the rest of them. They have the 70 nations mentioned in this chapter 11, which reminds us of the 70 palm trees and the 12 springs when Israel were in the wilderness. The 70 nations, and Israel typified as 12 springs, being a blessing to the nations, which we find coming up in our next chapter. On that, chapter 12. We have Abram mentioned here, and Terah his father. Now the Lord said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, unto a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great. Thou shalt be a blessing. I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curses thee, and in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed. That's quite a promise. Well, that promise is set aside for the time being today, but it'll be finished. And especially in the millennium, all the nations of the earth be blessed through the seed of Abraham. Well, it's been a great blessing to the earth in many ways now. We look at the great advances made, inventions, and humanitarian things and so on. We've found that the Jews have been a leader among the nations. You can contrast them with Egypt, with Rome, Babylon, Assyria, Nineveh, all the rest of them. They have been a peculiar people, very much so. Now, the call of Abram here in this is about 1946 B.C., when he's 50 years old. He was born in 1996 B.C. Remember, we're counting backwards when we're at B.C., so the numbers get smaller instead of larger. Now, from this time that Abram was called, given the promise, until Acts 28:28, AD 64, Israel were it. They were the nation, the leading nation. God has paid special attention to them. But at Acts 28:28, Israel had so rebelled, had so rejected the truth concerning their Messiah who came and was slain and rose again. They would not accept the truth. The reoffer during Acts there had nothing to do with. The last synagogue of the Jews to be talked to, it wasn't a synagogue, but a bunch of Jews came to the home of Paul, and he reasoned with them, and they wouldn't accept the truth. He said, now the salvation of God is sent unto the Gentiles. And Israel had their end there at 64 AD. How long? Remember, the Lord said that he would come when they would say, blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. How long? Hosea 6:2 speaks of 2 days, or two periods of time, or eras. And on the third, that Israel be restored. That would be their millennial kingdom. It speaks in chapters 3 and 4 of Hosea about the divorce of Israel. And that happened at Acts 28:28. So here we're getting an outline of the plan and purpose of God. How it's working. There's not a hint yet that God had anything prior to Adam in his mind. Any plans of any kind. We have to wait until we get to the book of Ephesians. Clear from Genesis to Ephesians before we can find another plan is in the mind of God. And one which is before all the rest of them. A plan is in his mind before the overthrow. And we can have a part in that today. We are certainly fortunate in this age that we can have a part in this great plan and purpose that God had in his mind before age times. Why? And to have a part outside of this creation that we find here in Genesis, into the heaven of heavens. You know, it's just too good to be true. And of course, that's the reason possibly that very few believe it. It's just beyond their wildest dreams. But how? How could this happen? That is their question. Well, there are a lot of things we could bring up in here. We can take a little brief course in the study of the history of Israel. We just can find this that started out with patriarchs like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And it wasn't long until the 12 tribes united became a nation. They had judges. Then finally they wanted a king like the rest of the nations. And so King Saul was their choice. Wasn't God's choice. And so it goes. He was a giant nearly. That is, he stood head and shoulders above the rest of the folks, a good warrior and so on. And that's what they wanted. Remember that man did not hunt man in the games of war until the time of Nimrod and the building of Tower of Babel. Warfare as such was not known till then. And he was a hunter. Hunter of his fellow men before God. And that's when they began to build fortified cities to keep the enemies out. Now before that they had walled the cities, but not to keep enemies out. That is, men, other men. But to keep out wild beasts and so on from their flocks and herds. And so they'd be enclosed a whole bunch of land. And they could keep these beasts out and raise their crops and their cattle and so on in comparative peace. Take, for instance, the city of Nineveh. That included a great deal of land. Remember, a couple of days for prophet Jonah to get to the center of the city. And so it was a custom at the beginning to build walls around the city to protect them from the wild beasts and so on. But when man began to hunt man, then the walls took on a different significance, a different purpose. That's just a little bit of history to give you an idea of the downfall of man. Now, the history of Israel, we have the patriarchs, and judges, and then kings. And, of course, all that time looking forward to a king who would bruise the serpent's head. And it was prophesied by the prophets where he would be born and about the time, so on, so people would know. There were some wise Jews left in Babylon after the coming back to build Jerusalem, and they had some of the scriptures, and they knew about it, and they saw something that was unusual, a light in the sky, not a star. Well, they called it a star because they didn't have a name to call it, but it wasn't a star, and it moved. Now, it wasn't very high. In fact, it was low enough that it could settle over a house and pick that house out and they know whose house it was. Now, you can make your guess of how high that might have been. Well, they stopped in Bethlehem, and these wise men and inquired about it, and the scholars there said why he was to be born in Bethlehem of Judea. He wasn't born in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. They went and gave their gifts. How many of these wise men are, we don't know. There were three gifts, but how many wise men, we don't know. As I said, no doubt in my mind that they were Chaldeans, wise men, the Jews, left behind in the captivity. I might add right here that there's something that's bothering folks a little bit, and it has been some discoveries lately that might. But there was a prophecy about a mother in Israel in the line of Christ, a Hittite. And we've never been able to answer that, really. We do know that the husband of Bathsheba was a Hittite. Of course, that would make her a Hittite sin too. But who were the Hittites? Well, now, in the excavations that they're making and so on, they're beginning to come to the conclusion that the Hittite Empire and the Chaldean Empire were one and the same. And Abram was from Chaldea. So you see that Bathsheba could have been practically in the line from the origin of Abraham. So Solomon wasn't marrying clear outside of his nation of that, was he? Well, that's just David. And Solomon was the child. And he praised his mother. I wouldn't have time to go into all of those things that connected with that. A wonderful story about King Solomon and his life and so on. We come to the end of the kings of Israel, a Babylonian captivity, and that captivity is taken over by Medo-Persia. We read the story of Ahasuerus and Esther, their son, and his Cyrus, and his interest in the rebuilding of Jerusalem, as well as that of Ahasuerus. We have to skip over a lot of material here. and we come into the what we call the New Testament. And there we find it beginning practically with the ministry of John the Baptizer. Now, when you look at the Old Testament, and you read the last book, Malachi, and start in with Matthew, there's practically no break. Strange. Well, it's the same people. Matthew is talking to the same people that the prophet Malachi was talking to. Israel. So there's really not much of a gap between the testaments of that. We call them testaments. Testament is a covenant given. We'll have to take that up sometime too. But Israel had failed from the patriarchs through judges and kings up until the time of Christ. And he was born when that country was under the heel of the Roman tyrants. Slaves, practically. And here he was born in Bethlehem of Judea. Well, we take up the story to Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John of his life here on earth. His rejection, the treatment he received, betrayed by one of his own disciples, and put to death, actually, by the Romans, but the Jews had him do it. The Jewish leaders were just a little bit afraid to murder the Messiah themselves, so they connived. Some false charges and so on to get the Romans to do the job, the dirty job. Now, not all of that Sanhedrin was against him. Read the account very carefully. Nicodemus wasn't. And there was Gamaliel. And I don't know whether Joseph of Arimathea was a member of the Sanhedrin or not. It doesn't tell us. He might have been. He was at least was a wealthy man. Very wealthy. Some of the story. When the Lord departed, he gave his message over to the apostles to do. And so we start out with Acts, and that is the things which the Lord both began to do and to speak. So he continues his ministry through the apostles. So Acts is still the ministry of Christ till the end of it. And there, at the end of Acts, he is rejected, finally. The apostles had gone through all the cities of Judea and the surrounding ones, giving the message out to the Israelites in the land. Paul was selected as special apostle to take this same message of the gospel of the kingdom out into the foreign lands and visited the main synagogues of the world at that time. And in practically every one, there was rejection. Very few that followed after. And the final rejection was in his room, the house that he lived in Rome, in chains. And there, they couldn't agree. They wouldn't accept the truth. And so Paul gave the final pronouncement that the salvation now was sent unto the Gentiles. The salvation of God is Yeshua, a person, as you find in Isaiah 62:11. Yeshua is pronounced, it's translated salvation, was personified because he brings certain things to the people and so on. So it's spoken of as he. And so the salvation of Israel is rejected for the final time in Acts 28:28. Israel again in the land someday. Revelation 12. Revelation 21. Find a new heavens and a new earth. And Israel having the preeminence, the city having the 12 tribes in it, with openings for doors for each one, And so that'll be a great time on a new earth with a new heavens above. All these former things be forgotten. Now, that takes this lesson and the one before it, a sort of a history from the beginning in Genesis 1:1 up to and ending with Israel's being set aside. Now, before that, we had given a message on this great message we have today, the gospel of the dispensation of the mystery. I put them in the reverse order, you see. So this ends this series.